Thank you for downloading the PR Week, PR Week's weekly podcast. For more podcasts as well as breaking news, visit prweek.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the PR Week. That's PR Week's weekly podcast on everything going on in the worlds of PR and communications. My name is Frank Washcook. I'm your guest host for this week, and we have a terrific guest for you. It is Mark Penn, the principal of both MDC Partners and Stagwell Group, and soon to be chairman and CEO of the network formed from the combination of those two. So, Mark, welcome.
Thank you.
And also with us today to bring us up to speed on the biggest marketing and communications news of the week, including the inauguration of a brand new White House press secretary, is PR Week's associate news editor, Diana Bradley. Diana, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Glad to have you aboard. So, Mark, lots to get to, including this week's inauguration of Joe Biden as the 46th president. But first, can you give us an update on the combination of MDC and Stagwell? How are things coming together?
Sure. I'm really looking forward to the next stages here as we file yet more documents before the shareholders for a final vote on this thing. But really, look, the excitement is around, you know, creating something as fantastic and dynamic as really a new $2 billion, you know, modern marketing company, which really represents the fusion of really Stagwell, which really went from zero to $900 million in cap revenue in the last 5 years, almost under the radar screen here, and MDC, which has incredible frontline creative agencies. And now I think together it really has the talent and technology that I think modern marketers are really looking for at a growing scale that I think is going to open up a lot of new potential clients for the group.
Yeah, that's right. You formed Stagwell, I think, about 5 years ago. Now, what do you see as the big differentiator with the combined MDC and Stagwell when you compare that to other holding companies or other networks?
Well, I was able really to start Stagwell fresh due to coming out as being chief strategy officer of Microsoft and say, well, look, what if you approach marketing from a digital first perspective? How would you build it now without legacy companies? The kind of thing that I really wasn't able to do when I was at WPP. And I wanted to modernize Burson, frankly. And they said, well, yeah, that'll take this and maybe that and give us a few years here and there. And instead, we could build it up from the ground up, have the kind of combination of engineers, designers, performance marketers, you know, create, have an engineering group with our own digital products. I can do all those things, right? Because we started them from scratch. And now we can say, well, okay, but having grown to this level and showing that kind of strong growth in the marketplace, let's also combine it with, you know, the award-winning, you know, talent and ad creation that really exists in MDC. And a lot of other things exist in MDC as well. But I think that combination together is what really sets us apart, in that these other holding companies were not digital first. They're in the way. They're right now in a process of kind of slimming down their organization, getting rid of assets. We're building it up with the most modern, talented, creative, digital first kind of assets. And we've gotten to a scale, you know, much larger than S4 or, you know, the other folks that really tried to do this really didn't get very far compared to what we've been able to do in the last 5 years.
Who do you see as the potential competitors and the current competitors, of course, but who do you see as the potential competitors when you bring these two organizations together? I mean, is it the WPPs and the Omnicoms, or is it more the Accentures and the consulting groups?
Well, I think what happens today is in a typical large scale pitch, they're going to consider, I think, one of each. And I think they're consider a traditional holding company, and the traditional holding company, they'll conclude, well, you know, they're not quite as responsive. They have great global coverage, but, you know, the talent may not be, you know, as good or as nimble or as creative as we really want. So I think they're going to find some deficits in that. Of course, they sometimes don't and often award them business. And then they look at Accenture and Droga and say, well, they've got really a great digital spine here, but I don't really think the creative, that's really only one option in the creative. And I see us as a little bit more of the Goldilocks of the crowd, in which which we really have that right combination, whether it's performance marketing or influencer marketing or platform building or digital design, combined with the creativity that that they're looking for. I mean, we have over 650 just engineers able to apply, you know, against a strong digital problem. So I think that right balance, and of course, we're going to be able to, and we'll build out more of the global marketplace, again, as you need it, as opposed to, you know, having to be in 128 countries. We'll be in 23 countries together. And I think we're going to push that out to up to 30 or 35 in the next year or two.
So you talked about hiring a lot of engineers and how that is different from a traditional holding company like WPP. I mean, what were the other lessons you learned from working at Burse and working at WPP, or even working at Microsoft, that informed what you're doing now?
Well, I would say that I learned some good habits, mainly financial management habits at some of the big holding companies, but that I didn't think that talent was managed and rewarded the same way at a place as it was at Microsoft. Yeah. And so I take really the good financial management, combine it with kind of really improved, you know, talent management, and create also, I think, a culture more of collaboration. I think, you know, when I was in the holding company, it was really designed, and I think MDC of old was also designed for everyone to be an island, for everyone to compete against each other. And instead, kind of, I've redesigned it and designed Stagwell from the ground up to be all about collaboration together, so that you're really working together, know each other, are a working group, or incentivized that way. And I think that really produces, you know, much, much better coordinated work, you know, for clients. Look, today, a marketer can't do with just advertising and media placement. They need advertising, performance marketing, e-commerce, influencer marketing. They need to knit together, you know, 5, 6, or 7 different disciplines, you know, at a time to really have a successful campaign. And I think, considering that that's the need, this is really where this new culture and operation shines.
So MDC already has a stable that includes KWT, it includes Hunter Allison. Stagwell owns SKD Knickerbocker, part of Finn Partners. What is the combination going to mean specifically for the PR firms in your businesses?
Yeah, I think one thing, and a slightly aside to that question, is that you know, we looked at PR and some of the tools that people need. And the last year, we've actually built, and it shows you that how you can combine kind of PR know-how, you know, coming from Aaron Quicken, with the fact that we've got a great client base, with the engineering base that we have. So we've developed a product, Profit, right, which I think uniquely comes out of the combination of the companies, because Stagwell Technology built it, and the MDC firm really conceived of it. And what we have is an annual Shark Tank competition for tech development. And this product actually takes a release, and it uses AI to predict how the release will be received, and, you know, and which writers, you know, will receive it positively or negatively. So I think it's an incredible tool. I haven't seen anything, you know, quite like it. It's not perfect. No technology is incredibly perfect. But frankly, it provides AI expertise in analyzing potential coverage in a unique way. And so I think being able to get that to market and build even more products like that is a very unique asset of the combination. And I think, look, we've got Allison and Hunter. These are very strong. I mean, if you look at our communications firms here, Allison, you know, Hunter, SKDK, at Targeted Victory has a strong, a public relations communications element as well. And then you look that we've got Ray Day as vice chairman, who really comes off of being, you know, a CCO at Ford and IBM. I think you look at the range of skills here, everything through kind of crisis and issues management, where I think they're extremely strong, through an incredible, you know, client practice over at Allison. I think this is a very strong combination.
Yeah, I think Ray Day was an excellent hire, and I think it definitely raised some eyebrows for you guys. Any plans to make any acquisitions in the PR space in the future as you bring this all together?
I think we're going to continue to expand the global network in PR. I think Allison, in particular, has a long way to go. I think SKDK has a long way to go. We recently made some acquisitions that extended. In fact, we also brought Sloan over from MDC. I think both of those will have acquisitions, and particularly I think international acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the economy going? Well, we're in 2021 now, but as we fully get in swing here, what do you make of the state of the broader economy right now?
It's a little perplexing to read it. I mean, I think the people have kind of figured out, you know, unless you're a restaurant, unless you're an airline, unless you're in the most directly affected industries, then you've kind of figured out how to operate, or how you should be operating, or how you should be on more online, or how you should have contactless, transactions. People have adapted to this. In fact, now we're going to have a process. I think April will really represent a kind of a tipping point here, at which point a significant number will be vaccinated, and you'll begin to see things kind of, I think, transformed in the summer, where travel will come back, and people will be looking to really, it's almost like getting out of hibernation. You know, it'll be a year and a quarter of hibernation in many ways for hundreds of millions of people. So I really look to the summer as an incredible time and pick up in the economy. And I think the economy right now has a lot of problems with it, which are being addressed to somewhat with stimulus, and a lot of areas that have adapted.
I can tell you, I personally are looking forward to getting out of hibernation by this summer. So fingers crossed. You mentioned S4 before. What do you make of what Sir Martin is doing with his new network, his new holding company?
Well, look, I think it's interesting. I mean, I worked with him when he was against everything he's for now. Had he been for everything he was against, I might actually have stayed. Because I think that was really the primary area of conflict. Look, I think he paid very high prices. He was in some of the bidding, and I think he's banked more on the in-house marketplace. And I think the in-house marketplace is a little bit more of a fad, in that corporations go in-house just as they become, you know, every few years dissatisfied with their agency, no matter how good. They also become dissatisfied with their in-house operation, only it then becomes trickier to change, and then some cost-cutting thing comes along. And the digital marketplace is more complex than old-style advertising. It would have been so much easier to produce a few TV ads in-house and put them on TV, but and because the cross-scale of the marketplace means that agencies have an added benefit that only maybe the top 10 or 15 marketing companies could possibly get, and so consequently, I don't think that is the in the long run the most successful marketplace to be in.
All right, interesting perspective on that. So I'm dying to get your point of view on, because you have worked in this space. You worked for President Bill Clinton. How would you rate the inauguration yesterday of Joe Biden as the 46th president, given all of the challenges between security and the pandemic and everything else? How would you say the inauguration went for Biden and for the Democrats?
Well, look, if you judge things by the coverage, you couldn't possibly got any better. It received a glowing, almost fawning coverage. And it was good. There was really nothing to, you know, I think the absence of the prior president, I think that only reflected poorly on the prior president. And I think the speech was good. Everything was really well produced and really well received. And the speech had some key lines in it, about being uncivil, ending the uncivil war. So I think that it went really well. What I think was missing, and what I'm a little puzzled about, and I haven't followed the the trends today is that although I saw the press secretary addressing the press, is the president going to actually take questions from a press corps for more than 10 minutes? And to take the kind of questions at press conferences that I certainly remember being with President Clinton on, and that Obama did, and that Trump did, or are we just going to hear from the press secretary? I mean, that to me is the big open question here in terms of press coverage of the administration that I assume we'll see answered over these next couple of days.
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think it's something we all have an eye on. How would you say that Jen Psaki did in her first briefing in the briefing room?
I thought she did very well. I thought she was articulate. She was responsive. Like all press secretaries, she tells you the questions she's going to answer. She's going to tell you the ones that, well, you might as well not ask it because I'm not answering that one. I thought she was professional. She was efficient. She was articulate. And she knew what she was going to answer and what she wasn't.
So let's say theoretically that the president asked you for advice on what he should prioritize, what he should focus on in terms of a communication strategy at the beginning of his term. What advice would you give him?
Well, he has a central communications theme. That communications theme is unity. So what you're concerned about here is that communications theme disrupted, which you can kind of tell quite easily from polling numbers. This is a pretty easy question. You know, to I know from polling that 65% of the public thinks that Biden won, 32% thinks he didn't, or whatever percent don't know. That means you can forget about getting the 32, but it means you really can get up to as high as 65. We used to have Clinton's approval in the 70s, which is something no president has had since then. And so the question is, are you able to communicate the unity message, or do things kind of go off the rails that way? The right disrupts that message. The left, the left comes in here and also, you know, provides ammunition against the message. So that means you've got to show what unity means, how you're going to do it, what events you're going to stage. Otherwise, you're not going to be successful with what you've outlined as your primary message.
What does Biden or his team have to say to the public about the pandemic? Is there one theme or one thing he should focus on with that?
Well, I think constant information, assurance that the right people are in charge. I mean, again, I think the previous president did not run it even remotely the way we would have done it with Bill Clinton. We would have, we would have had a general out there every day, you know, with a briefing. We would have showed always on top of every issue, even if you're not really solving them, and obviously kind of not make it personal to the president as much as having an efficient, visible operation, providing a primary source of information, and really understanding and showing that they understand what's happening in the country and what has to happen. Of course, you have to reduce it and get over it. But I do think the basic tool, the vaccine, right, combined with, you know, mask wearing and distancing, but most importantly, the vaccine should end this thing in the next 6 months. So if you're not getting the vaccine out, you're not on top of that, and you're letting a decentralized system not be as efficient as possible, you're not maximizing the result you need.
Mark, excellent, fascinating stuff. I want to move it over to Diana Bradley right now, who is going to talk to us about a few of the biggest marketing and communications news of the week. So first of all, Diana, you wrote up something about Jen Psaki's first briefing, and it looks like it's getting good reviews from PR pros across the spectrum, so to speak, right?
Yes. So just as an overview of what she actually talked about, she promised to bring truth and transparency to her exchanges with the news media and took questions from almost every reporter. And she said she has a deep respect for the role of a free and independent press in our democracy and pledged to hold daily briefings, save for weekends. And something else of note that she said was that there will be moments where we disagree, but we have a common goal, which is sharing accurate information with the American people. So generally, social media users viewed her press conference as delightfully sane. looking around social media at what communicators specifically on both sides of the political aisle were saying, they were highly praising her first press briefing under the Biden administration. Steve Schmidt, who helped run George W. Bush's 2004 presidential campaign and spearheaded John McCain's 2008 White House bid, tweeted that she was incredible to watch. There are no words to describe my feelings of elation to see somebody behind the podium and the degenerate liars of the last 4 years relegated to the ash heap of history.
Steve might be he might be hamming it up just a little bit with that one. Of course, he's more recently of Project Lincoln and and Edelman before that. I watched a bit of it last night, and she did dodge some questions for sure. But it did sort of feel like a return to normal. There was no dispute over the crowd size. There was nothing too out of the ordinary. It just sort of felt like getting back to normal. Now she's going on. We're recording this on Thursday. She's going on again today at 4. We'll see how it happens on a day to day basis after this. Diana, tell us about one of the more respected chief communications officers out there, Turod Neptune. He has moved into a new interesting role.
Yep. So he has joined Medtronic as SVP and Chief Communications Officer effective February 1st. He will report to Medtronic CEO Jeff Martha and serve as a member of the company's executive committee while leading global communications and corporate marketing for the medical device maker. And he replaces Rob Clark, who left Medtronic to join ExxonMobil as head of global communications in September. So currently, Turod is a worldwide group VP and chief communications officer at Lenovo Group. And Charlotte West, who is executive director of global corporate communications, will serve as interim chief communications officer at Lenovo.
Every time you talk to Turod, he always has his finger on the button of what's happening out there. So we wish him well in the new role. I was talking to a colleague of ours over at MM&M, our sister publication within Haymarket, and they were just saying Medtronic is just, it is blowing up as a medical device company, and there is a lot happening there. So he'll be busy in that role. Okay, just give us a quick roundup as we wrap things up on some new appointments at BCW and at Marina Mar Communications.
Sure. So BCW has hired Christina Lucky as EVP and Brand Solutions Practice Lead for North America. And she started in the role this week on Wednesday, based in Dallas, and she will report to BCW President of North America, Chris Foster. She'll be responsible for leading and growing the practice across the region. And then at Marina Mar, there was several new senior leaders appointed there. Earlier this month, the agency named Amy Inzanti as its new chief strategy officer, and she replaces Joydeep Day, who left the agency last year. And then the agency also recently promoted James Ferber to executive creative director, and they hired Yvette Oso for the new role of MD and business strategist.
So a string of hires over at MMC and one really good hire over at BCW. Diana, thanks for all of those. Mark, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it. Really fascinating insight into the world of the holding company you're building and also into the early days of the Biden administration. So thanks again for joining us. One thing just to mention to the audience, if you still want to get entries in for our Hall of Fame 2021, you can still do that. There's an extended deadline into next week, but you have to hurry. So file those soon if you're looking to honor someone within your organization. That's all the time we have for this week on the PR Week. Thanks again to our guest, Mark Penn, and to Diana Bradley, and we will see you again next week.